of religion, of speech, to assemble, and the right to petition the government for redress. That includes printed and spoken words. Trump apparently decided to disregard this freedom and substituted in its place the right to determine what is free speech. Trump is, in fact, executing a tried and true policy of psychological and propaganda warfare. If you control what is the truth, then you determine what is real and what is not. Trump understands and is aware of the Kremlin playbook and immediately started creating an exclusive information bubble his followers would listen to. For it to be successful, he must discredit everything outside of that bubble. It is information control of the highest order. It's the tool of a tyrant. On the surface, Trump's calling fake news is a way to maintain support with his voters by dismissing reports that are contrary or have a negative image toward him. The danger of this is that Trump is well aware that he essentially makes his followers believe what he says over empirical fact. This is demagoguery. CNN's global reach in the news world is a primary reason that Trump attacks their coverage above all other networks. CNN is the go-to news channel for national crises and international breaking news. CNN's investigative reporting and critical eye toward the wave of quantifiable lies that come from Trump meant that their force of journalistic integrity had to be discredited. Trump tweeted, "At Fox News is much more important in the United States than CNN, but outside of the U.S., CNN International is still a major source of fake news, and they represent our nation to the world very poorly. The outside world does not see the truth from them." The media, to Trump, is strictly a weapon of disinformation, a platform for disseminating his hard-right ideological views. He is equally an easily misled consumer of fake news. Unless it comes from what he believes is a trusted source, it is a lie. Trump is known to watch the morning show Fox and Friends to get talking points on whatever he hears that he agrees with, and then later on pass these original thoughts on his Twitter account, as if he conceived them himself. It's the way a 5-year-old sees the world. All is original once it crosses his mind. Trump is certainly aware of how Putin attacked his news media detractors directly and won. In fact, Putin used the FSB and his state media agencies to turn his anger against the few independent news organizations and almost completely eliminated independent media in Russia. In 2017, Trump wondered aloud why the public airwaves were allowing his critics to criticize him, and if something could be done about it. He tweeted, "Fake news coming out of NBC and the networks, at what point is it appropriate to challenge their licenses?" He also had the Justice Department state that they were looking into CNN interfering with the Time Warner merger. Trump also pulled his signature move to wonder aloud if he should sue CNN. He told an audience, "These are really dishonest people. Should I sue them? I mean, they're phonies. Jeff Zucker, I hear he's going to resign at some point pretty soon. I mean, these are horrible human beings." Former U.S. Ambassador to Russia Michael McFaul noted that this was familiar. It is exactly what Putin did in Russia in 2000. The Kremlin had no problem taking heat for the hacking or electing of Trump. Their state media, WikiLeaks, and Trump's American allies gave them a reasonable level of deniability. Putin could maintain the fig leaf of being a strategic opponent or even adversary. America remains a military power whose projection across the Middle East, Asia, and Europe is a force that he could use to keep the Russian people supporting the Kremlin's new global adventurism and increases in defense. All of Russia's opposition to Trump was far more Potemkin Village than Kabuki Theater. A Potemkin Village is a fake face of dirt and grime, whereas Kabuki is precision, art, and beauty. That was not Putin's game. His game was action. Like a low-key street fighter from St. Petersburg, Putin's government was operating more like an industrial robot forging steel in a foundry. Covered in grime and immersed in heat, it was ruthlessly efficient and not dependent on human intervention when set to task. Although his plan took a lot of luck, it was well planned and factored in all the foibles of the Americans' current bout of self-hatred. Putin was sure that Trump would eventually lift sanctions and give Russia an economic breakout while the United States descended into political chaos. It was in Russia's interest to keep Trump in office, even with some friction. Trump believed in Putin's worldview, not Washington's or Reagan's, and not Barack Obama's. From the beginning of Trump's rise, one question loomed over his administration that eclipsed all others. Why? Why did Russia appear to pull out all the stops short of war to support a man who could barely read a teleprompter and whose sanity would be openly questioned? It was a word that every journalist, pundit, postman, and seamstress asked themselves each time Donald J. Trump sent an early morning tweet storm, made a seemingly unhinged decision, or ranted about himself lovingly on television. Why did he behave the way he did? It is an intriguing question. Based on what has happened and what could happen, one would not be faulted for assessing that American democracy has entered a great period of peril because no one could seem to answer the question why. To old spies and mafia bagmen, the answer was simple. Trump was in debt. The debt. The personal and financial debt owed by Trump on November 9, 2016, was not a mere humbled obligation to return a polite courtesy to the Russian leader and his allies who kept the faith. No, the election was fixed to benefit him personally. Russia set up for 4 years to put Trump in the position to win by the smallest of margins. They expended large quantities of illegal, covertly appropriated money. They used a large part of its clandestine and covert intelligence services and the power and goodwill of Vladimir Vladimirovich Putin himself. Donald J. Trump was now a debtor. He owed Moscow, who bought for him Cambridge Analytica, Julian Assange's WikiLeaks, the evangelicals, and even more money from the NRA than all before him. Moscow had its hands shaping the global support for Trump that would make him the leader of the alternative to the Atlantic Alliance. He is the first American populist president, and it is all owed to Moscow. It is a debt in the manner of a drug dealer who owes millions to a Colombian drug lord or mafia chief. Like a gambling addict is indebted to a loan shark, Putin made the debt with so high a payoff that as long as Trump can survive each day without decisive evidence on how much he really owes Putin, he can look forward to surviving the next day. Like all who survive such morally deadly people, they feel exuberant until they have to wake up and do their master's bidding for another 24 hours. Every day, debtors like Trump rejoice when they have been spared the collection of their mortal souls, particularly when their most cherished asset is their self-made reputation. This is not just about traditional financial insolvency. That is easy to remedy. When faced with bankruptcy to a bank or other traditional lender, the elite rich laugh on their way to Monaco and forget they ever had a payment to make. Trump has placed his bet on the number given to him by a corrupt casino owner and has taken home a massive jackpot. Yet the spoils are not his. Having won the presidency, Trump became a vessel for Russia. He would carry any amount of water they chose to give him. Would there be a reckoning of the engineered luck? Yes, like all who make a deal with the devil, there must be repayment with interest. That's the devil's bargain. The sword of Damocles that hangs over Trump's head is surely more than the fact that Moscow elected him president. His complete and total political and financial survival depends on Vladimir Putin keeping his mouth shut and his vaults inaccessible to U.S. intelligence. Clearly, Trump is working extra hard to make his payments on time every time, especially when he owes his own life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness to the pirate king who leads a global den of thieves. Speculation in the news media as to why President Trump aligns himself so closely to Vladimir Putin falls into one of three categories. 1. Was he the Manchurian candidate, a foreign agent infiltrated as a brainwashed drone to do Putin's bidding? 2. Was he a fellow traveler who had read, heard, and adopted the neo-Eurasian ideology and believes exactly as the Kremlin? Or 3, was he just an idiot who could be told anything by people of influence, and when he saw money, he would fervently stay as close to it as possible? One thing is certain. He is not the Manchurian candidate. It is clear to all who see that Donald Trump is in fact a willing participant in Russia's plans to break up global democracy. The Russians spent years crafting a pro-Moscow perception bubble so that when he was ready to run for president or participate in American politics, he would already have been indoctrinated in where he should enter foreign policy. The correct worldview would come from the Kremlin's worldview. His interactions with Russian money, women, politicians, and fake news had already shaped his perception of who and what Russia was, a personal ally. As he rose to prominence, the perceptions and data he was taking in were run through his own personal perception filter. That filter was also crafted in Moscow, as it was built from his experience with Russians. Much of the news Trump receives about Russia, if from American alt-right conservative news, Breitbart Media, and Fox News, has already been run through the fuel interjectors of Russian propaganda warfare distribution systems. By 2016, Russia could run virtually any anti-Hillary Clinton story and have it on Trump's lap in hours. All there is to know about Donald Trump and Russia is that he had no other frame of reference by which to form an opinion. He hated mainstream news media. As a functional illiterate, he never read papers, and now as president, he must have intelligence reports briefed to him. He eschews anything that smacks of political and foreign policy literacy that he did not form from his own personal experiences. Bottom line, in his own estimation, anyone who opposes Russia opposes Trump. Anyone who opposes Trump is his enemy. What we have witnessed is peak psychological warfare. Unless Russia moves against Trump personally in a blatant betrayal, such as releasing some forms of embarrassing kompromat that disables his presidency, he will be loyal to his friends in Red Square. This willful participation in Putin's clique shows Donald Trump is far from being a Manchurian candidate. If anything, he is a product of the first successful global cyber propaganda campaign to seize control of an enemy's leadership. He is a Siberian candidate. Moscow's man in Washington. Donald J. Trump never really won his seat in the Oval Office. He is a cardboard cutout for the real power behind him, the former Russian KGB spymaster turned American Republican. Trump could possibly fill the role of president, but Vladimir Putin would always be the shadow broker that put him into power. This thought so terrifies Trump that he would spend every waking day of his time in office refuting the accusation that he and his campaign had worked with Russia to betray the nation to seize power. His most utterly terrifying thought must be that even as one of the most powerful men in the world, everyone believes he was owned lock, stock, and barrel by the Kremlin. He was right. Testifying before the House Intelligence Committee, former director of the CIA John Brennan spoke on the matter of how Russia handles its assets and agents. They have been able to get people, including inside of CIA, to become treasonous, and frequently individuals who go along that treasonous path do not even realize they're along that path until it gets to be a bit too late. Trump has definitively convinced me that he transitioned from an unwitting asset of Vladimir Putin to a witting asset working in league with the Russian Federation. Which of the following could provide the key bit of data for that assessment? Was it his thumbs-up photo to Konstantin Rykov's offer to assist his campaign in 2012? Was it his telling Rykov that Cambridge Analytica was working on voter profiles and somehow they fell into the hands of the RFIRA? Was it his numerous meetings with Aras Agalarov? Was it the private two-hour dinner with the Russian oligarchy and his subsequent belief that Trump Tower Moscow was happening? Was it his casual comments to Yulia Alfyorova on his run for president in 2014? Was it his public endorsement of Russia's invasion of Crimea? Was it his son's desperation to meet with the lawyer Natalia Veselnitskaya to get dirt on Hillary Clinton in violation of numerous laws? Was it that he orchestrated lie after lie to the American people about his son meeting with Russian agents? Was it his openly begging Russia to hack and release Hillary Clinton's emails? Was it his professed love of WikiLeaks crimes? Was it keeping his son-in-law cleared after it was learned that he had met with a Russian spy bank, sought loans from Qatar, or asked the Russian ambassador for special communications to be hidden from the CIA? Keep in mind that Trump has publicly complimented Putin over 100 times in a year where he insulted over 425 people. The New York Times reports that former CIA Director John Brennan made some informed speculation. The fact that Trump has had this fawning attitude toward Mr. Putin, has not said anything negative about him, I think continues to say to me that he does have something to fear and something very serious to fear. As president, the New York Times would write about Trump's inability to comprehend the meaning of the words top secret. It said Trump simply did not possess the interest or the knowledge of the granular details of intelligence gathering to leak specific sources and methods of intelligence gathering that would harm American allies. This is almost the definition of a man unfit to be President of the United States. It would also be the definition of the perfect unwitting fool, the simpleton with a security clearance whose personal need to massage his ego and garner flattery, adulation, and approval from richer men than he exceeded the fundamental security needs of his nation. Trump ordered his National Security Council staff to investigate the possibility of removing American troops from Europe as a reward to Putin. He also ordered the Director of National Intelligence and the CIA to meet with the three heads of Russian intelligence, one of whom was under sanctions, in secret, and in Washington. Either one of these would be the basis for an indictment for conspiracy against the United States. A thought experiment. Replace the word Russia with ISIS in the previously listed activities. If any person in the United States had this same level of communication, coordination, and complicity in an active conspiracy with a threatening group such as ISIS, Al-Qaeda, or even the Chinese intelligence, there would have been a warrant for their arrest issued in record time. At the very least, an American with suspicious contacts with overseas agents entering government would have had federal investigators start a process to determine if there was, in fact, a secret desire to act as an espionage agent for a foreign power, if others were involved, and how deep it went. Even Trump has reluctantly come to find out that no American is above the law or so high that they are above suspicion, even the president. Enter the special counsel, former FBI Director Robert Swan Mueller III. As further information emerges from the Mueller investigation, the level of Trump's complicity will determine if it was all coincidence or a plot to commit treason. Epilogue. Freedom is a light. We are outgunned, outmanned, outnumbered, outplanned. We gotta make an all-out stand. General George Washington, Hamilton, the musical. As a boy, I used to solve my most taxing and vexatious problems on a bench behind Independence Hall in Philadelphia. Next to the statue of Commodore Barry, I would try to understand why my family cared so much about this nation. Why did my father show me how deeply he loved this country, even though as a black man he was disrespected at every turn in his life? Why did his father, my grandfather, volunteer to fight in the Great War and break his back offloading munitions and loading the dead in France? Why did his brother, my granduncle, run horse-drawn caissons filled with explosives to the front and back with dead white boys? Why did their father, my great-grandfather, run away from his plantation in Tennessee and take up arms in a regiment of U.S. colored troops? I discovered the answer one day walking from Independence Hall. I had walked past Washington Square 1,000 times in my youth, but never stopped there until I was in the Navy. I learned that it was originally a cemetery for slaves, and that during the Revolution it became a burial ground for perhaps 1,000 or more unnamed soldiers who died in the war. Above the mass grave turned park stands a statue of George Washington. In front of him is an eternal flame above the grave of the original unknown soldier. It reads, "Beneath this stone rests a soldier of Washington's army who died to give you liberty." I wonder now, how would Washington, the father of our country, the first in war, the first in peace, first in the hearts of his countrymen, feel about the divided United States today? I offer that he would weep with shame. He would shake in anger and stand up and raise his voice to oppose all threats to this great nation, both foreign and domestic. Like me, he would wonder if again in the life of this country will we toy with surrendering all that was won in blood, treasure, and love of liberty for the rule of the mob and the parcel tongue of the billionaire tyrant. Many of Trump's most ardent supporters wrap themselves in the flag and Constitution to argue for the destruction of that document's protections. Others say that the situation in America, crafted from their own ignorance, xenophobia, and an incessant feeding of Russian-backed propaganda, under an incredibly mild-mannered and even-keeled President Barack Obama, has led America to the brink of economic and cultural destruction. This is a horrible fantasy, which no one who espouses it could find a true documentable example. In fact, many feel that the greatest disasters of the early 21st century, the government's horrific response to Hurricane Katrina, the death toll of the Iraq War, the 2008 economic collapse, and the origin of the terrorist group ISIS, were all the responsibility, if not outright evil scheme, of the first African-American president. Needless to say, none of those incidents had their origins or presented themselves during his presidency. The fact that he inherited them and resolved those issues somehow inflamed the lower-class white voter even more. And why not? The Republican Party and Fox News were there at every turn telling them that the black president had destroyed America. No one ever went to the window to check if the nation was actually destroyed. Like the Soviet and Russian propaganda campaigns that steered these fantasies into the internet, the Trump voter believes all the negative propaganda must be true if other people within their information warfare bubble believe them as well. It's beyond confirmation bias. It is, in fact, a case of national brainwashing a la the Soviet system. This amazing turn away from American democracy while maintaining the trappings of the democratic legacy is astounding, not just because of its transparency, but in its bold assertion that what is happening is in fact American patriotism at its finest. So blinded by the Trump-Russian information stream, they think American patriotism is now defined by embracing the beliefs of a rich, ex-communist KGB officer and a con man who defrauded every blue-collar worker who ever laid eyes on him. Actor and activist Ron Perlman put it best when he said that Ronald Reagan's Beacon on the Hill has been replaced with an engine of hate. That people have passion in their souls to achieve ambitions above the station of regular men and women is right and just. It is to be admired. But Donald Trump's life has been a case study of deceit in a man's heart, leading him to the ruin of the American experiment. One of the most important statements in the entire national security debate was made by MSNBC's Joe Scarborough in an opinion editorial about Donald Trump's presidency. Scarborough noted, "While the framers of the Constitution foresaw the possibility of a tyrannical president, they never let their imaginations be darkened by the possibility of a compliant Congress." He is correct. The system was not designed to handle this level of corruption from two of the three branches of government. The Founding Fathers could never have conceived that their legacy, based on considered Enlightenment truths, girded by science and tempered by thoughtful discourse, of the American system of government would lose its way by willingly abdicating its role as three co-equal branches of government. Presidents and Congresses fight all the time. That was to be expected. It was a deliberate friction to incite debate and discovery, to compromise and advance legislation, to use the power of democracy to make the nation always great. Of course, the framers assumed nation-states, such as the great powers of Europe, would attempt machinations, but the very size of the body of representation and the equal branches would put a check on that. The Congress's ability to investigate chicanery stood the test even during the Civil War, but no one, not Jefferson, Franklin, Madison, Adams, Hamilton, or Washington, ever considered that the majority of the U.S. Congress and its sustaining political party could come under the thrall of a president who gives Benito Mussolini a run for his money. It can be assured that they would have never thought of Americans bowing publicly and openly to a European adversary whose spies had managed to seed the promise of enough gold that two-thirds of the government would consider the Constitution something of a secondary consideration, and George Washington would know he ran numerous spy rings. No matter what happens to Donald Trump, whether his presidency improves or collapses under its own weight, we are confronted by a party that no longer believes in the democracy that was formed by the Founding Fathers. For all the lip service to originalist American patriotism as it was conceived on July 4, 1776, Donald Trump has embraced policies, actions, and rhetoric that hew closer to those of King George III than George Washington. Hold fast. So where do we go? What are the solutions? They are simpler than one would imagine. America was built on the lone, volunteer citizen soldier, the Minuteman, standing up with whatever tools he had to hold his small part of the line of defense. We are in an existential fight for our nation's soul. The opponents of America's historical tradition of temperate liberty are fellow citizens who accept the words of a nation whose only information source was once Pravda, a news source that figuratively stood for fake news. We must stand and defend the accurate news media, the true stories that can be empirically counted. The one thing that all Americans have in equal share is their power to vote this travesty away. If every voter who voted for someone who embraced truth, decency, and dignity of our traditions, as opposed to a blustering xenophobe, that 65 million voters were to bring just one person who had never voted to any election, there would be a massive tidal wave of opposition to the crisis which faces our great nation. Vote plus one would bring to the polls 130 million voters. These numbers would reflect the real will of the American people. It is a time in American history where one must take a stand. stand for the founding values of America. The anti-democratic opposition want you to believe they hold the nation's values only in their hands by way of bumper stickers, the yellow Gadsden Don't Tread on Me flag, and AR-15 rifle decals with Come and Take It adornments on their cars. That is not America or its true values. The issue is not about who owns guns, but about who loves the real American story, warts and all. This is not a debate of partisanship, but one of patriotism, honor, and defense of the American national security infrastructure. If you need a refresher in that inspirational series of events, read the Federalist Papers or the debate on the Constitution, watch the TV series Turn, Washington Spies, or renew the love story of our founding fathers by listening to the soundtrack of Hamilton. Watch for the fault lines of the travesty and step into its face with your own voice. Discuss, protest, and make your voice heard. You must. A thought experiment. Imagine the stakes of what will be lost if you, the listener and lover of democracy, do not stand and place yourself between this new global fascism and the legacy of Philadelphia. You owe your children, and by extension, everyone who strived for a chance at democracy to have their voices heard. Americans, Europeans, and all who cherish the promise of freedom and democracy must hold high their defense of these values. When confronted with a tyrant, like our founding fathers were, we must risk our blood, our treasure, and our very lives to resist and oppose such a corruption of those who have entered the people's house and made it a den of villainy and inequity. 2016 was a banner year for Russia. In a carefully choreographed cyber warfare attack, the United States, France, Austria, and Montenegro would almost simultaneously fall into Moscow's sphere of influence. By January 2018, the European Union and NATO would have been on the brink of dissolution. If Trump and Le Pen both had won, they would have removed their support. Montenegro would have fallen in a bloody coup, and Russia would acquire a naval base in the Adriatic. Right-wing groups all over Europe would rise and force new elections. As Konstantin Rykov proclaimed, it will be a new world order. Only by the good sense of the citizens of France, a nation that saved America in the crib, through the election of Emmanuel Macron and the guardrails of American democracy, stopped the attack in its tracks. But like a bus teetering over the edge of a cliff on the Karakoram Highway, it's the passenger's decision about what to do next that determines their survival. One more false step to the right, and the balance of power in the world that has held the poisonous ideology of Nazism, fascism, and dictatorship at bay since 1945 may end. One last reminder from General George Washington about who we are and what we stand for. Citizens by birth or choice of a common country, that country has a right to concentrate your affections. The name of American, which belongs to you in your national capacity, must always exalt the just pride of patriotism more than any appellation derived from local discriminations. With slight shades of difference, you have the same religion, manners, habits, and political principles. You have, in a common cause, fought and triumphed together. The independence and liberty you possess are the work of joint councils and joint efforts, of common dangers, sufferings, and successes. America and Europe are now joined by a common danger, a philosophy that could easily consume our enlightened histories. It is our duty to stand up to and counterattack this mortal threat to our freedom and liberty. All who love freedom and liberty as they were given to us at the birth of the Herald of Democracy must hold fast and shout out the maxim of the United States Army, "This I'll defend." The salvation of the greatest political democracy in the history of the world is in our hands. We are the cavalry we have been waiting for. Now stop listening. Go forth. Save democracy. This has been a Hachette audio production of The Plot to Destroy Democracy, How Putin and His Spies Are Undermining America and Dismantling the West. Written by Malcolm Nance with a foreword by Rob Reiner. Read by Peter Ganim. Produced and directed by Cheryl Smith. Recorded by Charles McCrory and Jared Pinkney. Post-production by Christine M. Farrell. The Plot to Destroy Democracy is also available in print and digital formats from Hachette Books, a division of Hachette Book Group. For more Hachette audio productions, visit us at hachetteaudio.com. Thank you for listening. Text copyright 2018 by Malcolm W. Nance. Audio production copyright 2018, Hachette Audio, all rights reserved. Hachette Book Group supports the right to free expression and the value of copyright. The purpose of copyright is to encourage writers and artists to produce the creative works that enrich our culture. The duplicating, uploading, and distribution of this audiobook without permission is a theft of the author's intellectual property. If you would like permission to use material from the audiobook, other than for review purposes, please contact permissions@hbgusa.com. Thank you for your support of the author's rights.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.